direction-finding techniques to identify the source of the transmission as Goretzky's station. The FCC said Goretzky willfully violated Section 333 of the Communications Act and Section 97.101 Part D of the FCC's Amateur Service Rules, demonstrating a deliberate disregard for the Commission's authority and the spirit of amateur radio service by continuing to interfere with the local repeater despite having been warned. In Greene County, Ohio, one public official not only observed the ARES simulated emergency test this month, he participated in it with Greene County ARES. Greene County Sheriff Gene Fisher, KX8GCS, checked in when the Resource Net Control, Bob Baker, N8ADO of Beaver Creek called for volunteers. Although the suggested scenario called for only using Simplex, the ARES group used the Xenia Amateur Radio WeatherNet repeater to reach out for as many volunteers as possible. Net volunteers then switched to a Simplex tactical net to communicate with the ARES command center. Sheriff Fisher had an intense introduction to ham radio in the spring of 2017 when the Dayton Hamvention moved to Xenia, and his department dealt with traffic control and other issues created by the influx of more than 25,000 visitors. At the urging of several hams, Fisher subsequently got his license and his wife became relicensed. Fisher has since upgraded to general. Ward Silver, N0AX, is the winner of the October QST cover plaque for his article titled, About Impedance Matching Circuits. The QST cover plaque award, given to the author or authors of the most popular article in each issue, is determined by a vote of ARRL members on the QST cover plaque award page at www.arrl.org/cover-plaque-poll. According to reports, Southern rocker Larry Junstrom, K4EB, passed away on October 6th. Junstrom was a founding member and bassist of Lynyrd Skynyrd, although he left the group before it recorded its first album. He's better known as a member of another Southern rock band, 38 Special, with which he performed from 1977 until retiring in 2014. Licensed in 1962 as WN2LKF, later becoming WA4LKF, he was a regular attendee of Orlando Hamcation. Junstrom was inactive in amateur radio during his busy years on the road, but picked up the hobby again in 1990 and became an avid DXer with 347 entities in mixed DXCC. He was a frequent check-in to the Musician's Net on 40 meters. After retirement, Junstrom worked in real estate in North Central Florida. In DX news, due to the illness of a ZK-3A Tokelau Islands de-expedition team member, the operation has shut down a couple of days ahead of schedule. According to an announcement, the team has ceased operations and is packing up all equipment to get on their boat. The announcement did not identify the ailing team member. As of October 8, ZK-3A had logged approximately 50,000 contacts in 7 days on CW, SSB, RIDI, FT8, and Moonbounce, as well as 10 contacts on SlowScan TV. Hrein Milosevic, YT1AD, is the ZK-3A team leader. Although ZK-3A ended early, several new operations took to the airwaves this week. The shortlist includes 9J2MYT in Zambia, primarily operating SSB on 40 through 10 meters, 9G5GS in Ghana, mostly operating on FT8, T30GC on West Kiribati, working SSB, CW, and RIDI, and TA8UW on Palau, using FT8 and CW. Lots of special event stations will be on the air this weekend, including WC0RC from the Hartville, Missouri Fall Festival, K7T celebrating Columbus Day, N6M at the Rockland Mini Maker Fair, W0D celebrating Earth Science Week, and N3I honoring 100 years of radio. You'll find more information about these operations in your October issue of QST Magazine.
And now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
A two-person team from Cal Poly one a Cal Poly aerospace engineering professor and the other a computer engineering student, helped the Cambodian space program get off the ground in August. The pair traveled to the capital city of Phnom Penh to assist a group of high school seniors with the goal to install and test the students' ground station for tracking satellites. Not to launch a national program, but they were happy to play a role in the potentially history-making student project, as well as the bigger picture of lifting the nation into orbit. Thanks to the AMSAT News Service for this story. FO-29 will be available until undervoltage control activates in the CW telemetry. If it is turned on, you can use a satellite. Several hams have recently earned their VUCC on satellite. KJ-4M with 102 grids and N-4BAF with 100 grids. If you're in the D.C. area during the symposium, I will be checking cards for Wirkdal States and VUCC. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and this is the ARRL Audio News Propagation Forecast for Friday, October 11th. The sun remains spotless, and unless you count the extremely brief appearance of a spot a couple of weeks ago, it's been blank now for a month. As a result, the solar flux index has dropped to about 67. The solar winds are blowing our way, but we should only receive a glancing blow this weekend. That being the case, conditions should be pretty good on 40 and 80 meters in particular. On VHF and UHF, expect some good tropo openings in at least two areas over the next several days, from the Carolinas north to the mid-Atlantic states and northern New England.
And that concludes ARRL Audio News for this week. Our thanks to all contributors to this week's report. ARRL Audio News is produced by the American Radio Relay League, the National Association for Amateur Radio. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at ARRL.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment about ARRL Audio News, email us at audionews@arrl.org. This program is copyright ARRL, all rights reserved. 73, and thanks for listening.
Listen to me, said the demon as he placed his hand upon my head. The region of which I speak is a dreary region in Libya, by the borders of the river Zaire, and there is no quiet there nor silence. The waters of the river have a saffron and sickly hue, and they flow not onward to the sea, but palpitate forever and forever beneath the red eye of the sun with a tumultuous and convulsive motion. For many miles on either side of the river's oozy bed is a pale desert of gigantic water lilies. They sigh one unto the other in that solitude, and stretch toward the heavens their long and ghastly necks, and nod to and fro their everlasting heads. And there is an indistinct murmur which cometh out from among them like the rushing of a subterranean water, and they sigh one unto the other. But there is a boundary to their realm, the boundary of the dark, horrible, lofty forest. There, like the waves about the Hebrides, the low underwood is agitated continually, but there is no wind throughout the heaven, and the tall primeval trees rock eternally hither and thither with a crashing and mighty sound. And from their high summits, one by one, drop everlasting dews. And at the roots, strange, poisonous flowers lie writhing in perturbed slumber, and overhead, with a rustling and loud noise, the gray clouds rush westwardly forever, until they roll a cataract over the fiery wall of the horizon. But there is no wind throughout the heaven, and by the shores of the river Zaire there is neither quiet nor silence. It was night, and the rain fell, and falling it was rain, but having fallen it was blood. And I stood in the morass among the tall lilies, and the rain fell upon my head, and the lilies sighed one unto the other in the solemnity of their desolation. And all at once the moon arose through the thin, ghastly mist, and was crimson in color. and mine eyes fell upon a huge gray rock which stood by the shore of the river and was lighted by the light of the moon. And the rock was gray and ghastly and tall, and the rock was gray. Upon its front were characters engraven in the stone, and I walked through the morass of water lilies until I came close unto the shore that I might read the characters upon the stone. But I could not decipher them, and I was going back into the morass when the moon shone with a full red, and I turned and looked again upon the rock and upon the characters, and the characters were Desolation. And I looked upward, and there stood a man upon the summit of the rock, and I hid myself among the water lilies that I might discover the actions of the man. And the man was tall and stately in form, and was wrapped up from his shoulders to his feet in the toga of old Rome. And the outlines of his figure were indistinct, but his features were the features of a deity. For the mantle of the night and of the mist and of the moon and of the dew had left uncovered the features of his face, and his brow was lofty with thought, and his eye wild with care, and in the few furrows upon his cheek I read the fables of sorrow and weariness and disgust with mankind and a longing after solitude. And the man sat upon the rock and leaned his head upon his hand and looked out upon the desolation. He looked down into the low, unquiet shrubbery and up into the tall primeval trees and up higher at the rustling heaven and into the crimson moon. And I lay close within shelter of the lilies and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude. But the night waned, and he sat upon the rock. And the man turned his attention from the heaven and looked out upon the dreary river Zaire, and upon the yellow, ghastly waters, and upon the pale legions of the water lilies. And the man listened to the sighs of the water lilies and to the murmur that came up from among them. And I lay close within my covert and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude. But the night waned, and he sat upon the rock. Then I went down into the recesses of the morass, and waded afar in among the hippopotami which dwelt among the fens in the recesses of the morass. And the hippopotami heard my call, and came with the behemoth unto the foot of the rock, and roared loudly and fearfully beneath the moon. And I lay close within my covert, and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude, but the night waned, and he sat upon the rock. Then I cursed the elements with a curse of tumult, and a frightful tempest gathered in the heaven where before there had been no wind, and the heaven became livid with the violence of the tempest, and the rain beat upon the head of the man, and the floods of the river came down, and the river was tormented into foam, and the water lilies shrieked within their beds, and the forest crumbled before the wind, and the thunder rolled, and the lightning fell, and the rock rocked to its foundation, and I lay close within my covert and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude, but the night waned, and he sat upon the rock. Then I grew angry and cursed with the curse of silence. The river and the lilies and the wind and the forest and the heaven and the thunder and the sighs of the water lilies, and they became accursed and were still. And the moon ceased to totter up its pathway to the heaven, and the thunder died away, and the lightning did not flash, and the clouds hung motionless, and the waters sunk to their level and remained, and the trees ceased to rock, and the water lilies sighed no more, and the murmur was heard no longer from among them, nor any shadow of sound throughout the vast, illimitable desert. And I looked upon the characters of the rock, and they were changed, and the characters were Silence. And mine eyes fell upon the countenance of the man, and his countenance was wan with terror. And hurriedly he raised his head from his hand and stood forth upon the rock and listened. But there was no voice throughout the vast, illimitable desert, and the characters upon the rock were silence. And the man shuddered and turned his face away and fled afar off in haste, so that I held him no more. Now there are fine tales in the volumes of the Magi, in the iron-bound, melancholy volumes of the Magi. Therein, I say, are glorious histories of the heaven and of the earth and of the mighty sea and of the genii that overrule the sea and the earth and the lofty heaven. There were much lore, too, in the sayings which were said by the Sibyls, and holy, holy things were heard of old by the dim leaves that trembled around Dodona. But as Allah liveth, that fable which the demon told me as he sat by my side in the shadow of the tomb, I hold to be the most wonderful of all. And as the demon made an end of his story, he fell back within the cavity of the tomb and laughed. And I could not laugh with the demon, and he cursed me because I could not laugh. And the lynx which dwelleth forever in the tomb came out therefrom and lay down at the feet of the demon and looked at him steadily in the face.
Here's an interview from our partners at WOOCLP from the Sanctuary for Media Art in Troy, New York. You can go to the SoundCloud page for Media Sanctuary or look up the Sanctuary for Media Art webpage or Facebook page online for more information or to hear the complete interview.
We talk now with Neil Seldman, who is with and co-founder of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And he is going to be, he's an expert on many things, but particularly waste reduction and recycling. And he is going to be speaking about solid waste issues here in the Capital Region in New Albany on October 14th at the library and then over in creating a zero waste master plan for Schenectady County. Gets this a little bit more of a thing for government officials on October 15th. So, Neil, why don't you just, how did you become an expert or what attracted you to the solid waste issue?
I had grown up in manufacturing in my hometown of Brooklyn, New York. I worked in factories and eventually rose to a management position. But when I came to Washington to finish my graduate school, we focused on a community, Adams Morgan, in Washington, D.C., and I and my colleagues attempted to make this neighborhood self-reliant. It was a community of about 25,000 people. And we couldn't focus on every issue, but we did focus on energy, urban agriculture, and recycling. And I was assigned to focus on recycling to see what enterprises can come from the raw materials flowing through our community. And that led me to citywide issues, and eventually we started getting invitations from other cities across the country, and we were transformed from a community organization to a national organization. And I have been focusing on solid waste recycling and composting ever since, and it's been 45 years. So I've learned a few things.
And I remember, actually, I think it was back in 1985 I first ran into you when I wrote this report about why garbage incineration was not a very good idea. But another report I wrote 20 years ago when I was teaching at RPI has suddenly become a major issue in the city of Troy. Because part of they were playing games with the budget, but it led into the position of maybe we should consider a volume-based solid waste system. You know, the more garbage you throw out, the more you pay. Is that generally a good idea as a way to deal with garbage?
Yes. In fact, it's called unit pricing or pay as you throw. The household pays for as much garbage as they put out on the street. But recyclables and compostables are collected either for free or for minimal cost. And this, of course, provides an economic incentive for people to reduce their waste. And what we found, and there are thousands of programs called Pay As You Throw throughout the country, that a properly run system could reduce a community's waste by about 40%. And that's because of three factors. One, if you're paying for the amount of garbage you put out, you have incentives to compost in your backyard or participate in a curbside collection program for organics. Secondly, the same goes with recycling. You put out recycling and you don't have to pay for it. And finally, people change their purchasing habits. They don't want to bring into their house what they're going to have to pay to get rid of. So those combinations can lead to a 40% decrease in overall solid waste management. And in a study we did about 2 years ago, we found numerous cities, over 15 cities, that have reduced their per capita waste generation to less than 1 pound per day. For most Americans, it's about 4.5 pounds per day, minus 1.5 pounds for recycling and composting. So the Americans are averaging about 3 pounds per day. And pay-as-you-throw has allowed communities to reduce that by two-thirds.
Now, I believe this is the second time you've been in the Capital Region. I may have been up in Glens Falls in the last month or so. Why the sudden interest in the Capital Region? And what are some of the messages or lessons you're trying to help people with?
Sure. Well, my family has very deep ties in the Adirondacks. My wife grew up in Chestertown, New York, which is in Warren County, and we vacationed every year since 1965 in the Adirondacks, various places. So we have a real love for it. I followed solid waste issues, and a year or so ago, I started getting calls from Warren in Washington County, Albany, Ulster County, and other communities, describing what dilemmas of communities are facing with shortages of landfill, improper management of landfill, existing incinerators, proposed incinerators. So a few months ago, I accepted a speaking tour of various sites, Glens Falls in September, and as you mentioned, on the 14th and 15th, I'll be in Albany, and I probably will be in Ulster County on the 15th or 16th, although that is not confirmed yet. But in addition to my presence there and my presentations and meeting a number of people and getting questions by both officials and citizens, I've been able to link citizens and local government to key experts in the field of landfill management, pay-as-you-throw, composting, plastics recycling, and the hope is that the information now in the hands of the citizens and local governments will lead to solid waste, better solid waste and recycling planning. The basic principles are to keep things separate. The more separate you keep things, the easier it is to manage them. There are a number of strategies for that. There's the economic incentive for unit pricing, as we had just discussed, backyard composting, community-scale composting. We talked about a resource recovery park for the region, which would be an industrial park reserved exclusively for recycling, composting, and reuse enterprises to locate. Some states, like California, actually provide economic incentives for companies that locate in what they call recycling market development zones. There are about 40 of them in the state of California. Most recently, Austin, Texas, and Alachua County, Florida, the county where Gainesville is located, are building their own independent of state resources, their own they call them resource recovery parks, but resource recovery parks and recycling market development zones are essentially the same thing. We also encourage communities to ban products that are hard to recycle, such as single-use plastic foodware. We also encourage them, where possible, to gain control over a landfill, because under current U.S. law, if it's not a public landfill, the community does not have the legal right to keep garbage out of a private landfill. So if you own a landfill, we say the public should own a landfill and put it on a diet, meaning no organics in the landfill, no recyclables in the landfill. The organics out of landfill is a very important aspect, because most of the pollution coming from landfills, the liquid leachate that leaks out of the landfills, and the methane gas that is generated, organic material is the major cause of that. There's water in the organics, and when it digests, it creates methane, which have to be managed. Both are very dangerous if they're not managed, and it is expensive. The other important thing is that current laws in the United States, cities and landfill owners can get insurance for accidents and damages up to 30 years after the landfill closes. But after that 30 years, the government, the public, is responsible for whatever happens. And all across the country, you read about old landfills collapsing and requiring millions upon millions of dollars for renovation and repair. By keeping organics out of the landfill, you reduce those liabilities. In fact, in some communities, they actually dig up old landfills to compost the organics and put the inerts back in the landfill to reduce further environmental damage that Neil would be responsible for.
Neil, unfortunately, we're out of time. It's Neil Selman, the director of Waste to Wealth Initiative at Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Two talks at Albany Public Library on Washington Avenue, Monday, October 14th, or October 14th to 6 p.m., and then October 15th, also at 6 p.m., the second one, a little bit more of a workshop, sponsored by your usual environmental groups, but also the Troy Industrial Development Authority. Neil, you got a website if people want more information?
Of course. It's ilsr.org, and click on the Waste to Wealth Initiative, and you will see a lot of information on these topics.
That interview was from our media partners at WOOCLP in Troy, New York, run by the Sanctuary for Media Art. Go to their SoundCloud page, Media Sanctuary, or their Facebook page or web page for the Sanctuary for Independent Media for more information or to hear that full interview.